Sabbath was past. Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James and Salome had bought sweet spices that they might come and anoint him. And very early in the morning, the first day of the week, they came unto the sepulchre at the rising of the sun. And they said among themselves, "Who shall roll us away the stone from the door of the sepulchre?" And when they looked, they saw that the stone was rolled away, for it was very great. And entering into the sepulchre, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment, and they were affrighted. And he saith unto them, "Be not affrighted. Ye seek Jesus the Nazarene, who was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. But go your way, tell his disciples and Simon Peter, that he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him, as he said unto you." Hello, friends, and welcome to another one of my little talks. So this reading that I just read you is from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 16, and it begins at the beginning of chapter 16. And actually, believe it or not, there isn't much more to this chapter in the original Mark. I'm going to get into that in a little while. But first of all, let me say, a few weeks ago, it was Easter Sunday. And because it was such a big thing, this Anastasis, this rising, rebirth, whatever you want to call it, we're still celebrating it today. We're still in Easter, as it were. The fourth Sunday after Easter, or the fifth Sunday of Easter, depending on how you want to do it. Today, I don't intend to give any well-reasoned argument, but instead to present you with possibilities. I think at the moment in this world, there has been a little too much of the singular narratives, and it's just very disappointing when we discover that we've been lied to again and again by people purporting to be the authorities of truth. And as you know, in this little group, this little church, we value freedom of belief and curiosity into things hidden. So in the spirit of that freedom of mind that is our birthright, I am going to just present you with possibilities. What you do with them is your choice. So you heard in the gospel about these three women, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome, all going to the tomb with spices for the body of the Nazarene and worrying about how they're going to roll away the stone, and them getting there and the stone already being rolled away, the body not being there, and this young man in a white robe talking to them instead. Now, the funny thing is that just after this passage where the young man tells them, "You seek Jesus the Nazarene, why seek ye the living among the dead? He is not here, he is risen," and so on. There is another bit that goes, after he's told them to go and tell people about it, the last bit goes, "Then the women fled and told no one, for they were very much afraid." And that, believe it or not, is the original ending of the Gospel of Mark. That's right. That's the original ending. It's a cliffhanger. All our earliest codices, including Sinaiticus and Mark, right there on that cliffhanger. And it's only the later Gospels, Matthew, Luke, and John, that add stuff in about what happened next. A little bit like, I suppose you could call it a little bit like fan fiction. they wanted to do it a little better than the original. And this eventually led to Mark even being rewritten at the end and stuff being added on so it would fit in with the other bits. So that makes this a very interesting passage, partly because it is the original final passage of the first ever synoptic gospel, and partly because of some anomalies, the anomalies that I'm going to mention now. The mysteriously moved away stone, the missing body, the young man in a white robe, and the three women who flee. So let's explore them one at a time. The stone is moved away. Now, according to Rudolf Steiner's clairvoyant investigations, this happened because of an earthquake, which also swallowed the body of the Nazarene in a fissure, which immediately closed again. Now, that may resonate with you, or it may not. In support of Steiner, St. Ephrem asserts Jesus descended bodily to hell, where he freed the dead from their torment and became their bridge to paradise. So perhaps if he descended bodily to hell, then he descended physically into the ground? I don't know. But what does any of that have to do with what it means? Perhaps we need to consider more carefully what the stone being rolled away is. And in order to do that, we need to think about what the stone is. The stone protects the tomb, protects the dead body, and blocks the way both in and out. For the rising to happen, the stone being rolled away appears to be important. For the ancients, stones are what we would call semantically dense. That's actually, it's a linguistic term. They carry tremendous meaning, stones do. Think of the stone of Scone, or Liafal, the stone of destiny, or the cornerstone of the builder, the stone tablets of Moses, the stone of the hearth, standing stones, the stone altar of sacrifice of Abraham, of Agamemnon, and of Prometheus, whereon Prometheus is savaged by the eagle of Zeus. Not to mention the stone Sisyphus carries to the top of the mountain every single night, only to have it roll back down straight after. So this stone being rolled away is something significant symbolically, and seems very likely to be obliquely calling on the same archetypes as the Sisyphean and Promethean stories. Jesus, as savior of humanity from the wrath of the powers, as Paul would call them, is very similar to Prometheus, and as an escapee from death, very similar to Sisyphus. Yet the stone rolls no more and Jesus is gone, as if it were like a version of these two champions of humanity where they became free. What is the stone? Perhaps it is something like the sand ostriches stick their heads in when seeking to avoid danger. Perhaps it is the ossification of outworn beliefs, or a reality based on the semi-truths of materialism and scientism. Materialism, you see, is the idea of only things that are material, that are concrete, are real, things that you can measure with your concrete instruments. And scientism, of course, is the religion that purports to be science. But it's not science. It's just a belief system that says that science is always right. Perhaps it is the density of the material plane itself, or the rolling away of apparently concrete reality to present another deeper truth beyond, which is usually veiled from us. Perhaps even one veiled by the natural senses. Certainly something about an aspect of the material making way for something new and living, not unlike what is happening in this world right now. And I think that's a mystery of which truth we have to look within our own hearts to discover. I said I was going to be presenting you with possibilities, didn't I? Now, the missing body. On the face of it, the body is missing because Jesus is alive. Actually, this is an old device in Jewish and actually other literature. Moses' body disappeared too. So did Elijah's, Enoch's, and King Hiram's. In fact, disappearing bodies abound in the Old Testament. And the usual interpretation goes, the body is gone. He must really have been translated into heaven to be with God because God was really pleased with him. But there's also, as I may have mentioned a couple of weeks ago, the disappearing body of Romulus. And if we go to the historical record, we've even got the disappearing body of Akhenaten. And there's a few other disappearing bodies in other in other parts of European culture. And there's way more disappearing bodies than you might think there would be. And so anyway, this could be taken to indicate anastasis or rising, often called resurrection, since the different Christian creeds came into wide circulation. However, we might consider the rising and living of Mark and Paul may not imply bodily resurrection in the sense now widely believed in by most Christians, but something perhaps rather different and perhaps considerably more subtle. What about the young man sitting on the right in the white robe? Why on the right? So clearly he's a messenger of some kind. So in that sense, he is an angel. But he seems just like a mysterious young man. In the Hellenic world, for which this gospel was written, the gods are usually depicted as appearing as young men in white or shining robes. So possibly it's a veiled reference to Hermes Mercury, the messenger, or who would be the same as Raphael, I suppose. Or perhaps he's an Essene therapeute or a Nazarene from which sect Jesus may have originally come. They also wore white robes. Perhaps if the white robe is instead a reference to his aura, the young man is a member of the Great White Brotherhood, the doves of peace and wisdom. Perhaps, if you credit such things. Perhaps even more far out, but ultimately pleasing to those of a theosophical bent, he is one of the Kumaras, or eternal youths, embodied in the Seven Rishis constellation, which we Westerners call Ursa Major, the Great Bear. Perhaps he is even Sanat Kumara. Which is true. Perhaps none. Why is he sitting on the right? Well, think of all the other times someone is said to be sitting on the right. Is it just an extra detail to make it seem like an eyewitness account? Or is it something else? This brings me, finally, to these three women who cared for Jesus. Apparently, they ran away and told nobody in the original gospel. They told nobody. So how did we get to know the story if it's an eyewitness account? Something fishy is going on here. So let us hypothetically consider it is not an eyewitness account. And maybe that's a signal that it's not an eyewitness account. But rather a narrative very carefully crafted to do something to those hearing it. If so, it appears this apparently abrupt ending to the original first gospel is an invitation to interact with the risen Christ ourselves. By looking within, perhaps? Or by looking in the world? After all, the young man on the right gives the women a promise that if they proclaim Jesus' triumph over death, they will see him risen in Galilee. So today, perhaps, we are challenged to roll our own stone away, pull our own heads from the sand, as it were, and take on the message of the young man in white, to look around and see and proclaim Christ in our world, in each other, and in all human beings, even in ourselves. For where else could the living one be? Thank you for listening, guys.